Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. And this is The Morning Show with Chris Bessler and Susie Prez. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Susie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. A lot going on in our community, and we have a special guest in the studio for our morning show interview, Jennifer Stapleton. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
And you are our new city administrator.
That's correct.
Okay. And it will be fun to get to hear how your transition to our area is and how the job's going.
Great.
But before we get to that, what do we want to do, Chris?
Let's have some weather, Susie.
Okay. The weather currently from the National Weather Service, 27 degrees, a little crispy out there. My windows were covered in ice this morning. Mm-hmm. We have a 60% chance of snow showers likely, mainly between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. That's most of the day. Patchy fog before 10 a.m. Otherwise, mostly cloudy with highs near 33. Southwest winds 3 to 5 miles per hour. And as I said, chance of precipitation is 60%. Total daytime accumulation less than a half an inch. Hopefully a little bit more up on the mountain. Tonight, slight chance of snow and low 25. And tomorrow, high 33. Wednesday night, 80% chance of snow. And it looks like it could be 1 to 3 inches with a low of 29.
That's actually some pretty nice winter weather. Nice temperatures, a little bit of snow. Here's what else is going on outside. The sunrise this morning was at 7:13 a.m. Sunset will be at 4:46 p.m. And I'm happy to report that over the past 7 days, we've gained 20 minutes of daylight per day. So as we're again coming closer to the spring equinox.
You're the man now with the good news. That's the good news
this time
today.
Of year. Yeah, that's that's easy. The moon is waning. It's now about 35% full. The new moon will be next Monday. Up at Schweitzer, they have just an inch of new snow overnight, but that's on top of 96 inches on top, 76 inches mid-mountain. They have 37 groomed runs, 7 lifts running, and the skiing is really quite good. I heard the skiing over the weekend was really very nice. Out in the back country, the avalanche danger is moderate in the Selkirks and Cabinets right now, but that means do always be careful if you're traveling in the back country. The lake level has held about exactly the same level the last week. It's at 2052.57 feet and is projected to stay there in the next week. And that's what's going on outdoors. What else is happening around this town, Susie?
Well, I'm not really sure.
I mean, actually, this is one of the quietest weeks of the whole year. And part of the reason is because this coming weekend is Super Bowl weekend.
So people just stop doing things.
They clear the decks for Super Bowl. Hopefully towards the end of the show, we'll be able to get into some community calendar items. There are always things going on in our town.
Yep. The Follies tickets go on sale. That's one thing I know for sure. And I guess that sells out pretty quick.
It does, actually. Okay. Yeah. Follies is a sure sellout every year. So, and that, of course, is our kind of risque variety show, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah, it's a not for the faint of heart.
Yes, but it is a big fundraiser for Angels Over Sandpoint, and they're a great group. They do a lot of good things with the money they raise there. So
another thing that's coming up tonight, I'll just say it now. I'll say it at the end of the show. We have a new show on KRFY. It's called Live and Local. It's at 7 o'clock on every Tuesday night. And I'm the host of the show. It's kind of like an invitational open mic, where musicians come in and play live in the studio. Tonight, my guests are Desiree and Fiddlin' Red from Roughshod. So that'll be kind of fun tonight.
That sounds very fun.
Yeah, banjo, a guitar, and a fiddle. What can you go wrong with that, right?
Yeah. And news-wise, actually, kind of the bigger things in the news this past week have to do with the city. And we one of the things is that the Schweitzer Bridge is going to get ITD funding. That was announced this week. And then there was a bit of a brouhaha over the trees being removed at Memorial Field to make room for the new grandstands project. Over at the county, there's a little bit of controversy going on in the planning department. The county's also looking at ways to replace the breakwater at the thoroughfare up on Priest Lake, which anybody that's traveled up there knows that breakwater basically keeps the thoroughfare open between the lower lake and the upper lake. That's kind of a big decision there as well. And as always, plenty going on around town. But I think that we have somebody in the studio that will be able to fill us in on at least some of the city happenings. Again, we have Jennifer Stapleton with us. She's the new Sandpoint City Administrator. Started her job just 1 month ago, basically today. Again, Jennifer, thank you for being in.
Well, thank you for having me.
And we thought that this would be a great opportunity just to for you to introduce yourself to the community. And my first question to you would be, tell us about your background.
Well, I graduated from Gonzaga University and have a master's degree from Eastern Washington University in public administration. Graduated from there and started writing grants in the police department in Spokane. And you never think you're going to have a career in grants, but was successful at the front end, so there we go. Wrote a grant for a community group that was doing strategic planning around domestic violence, and got the grant and needed a job, so went to work for that group for about 14 years, formed it into a formal nonprofit organization, and led those community education and outreach efforts, and as well as coordination of services and prevention efforts. So was there for 14 years and had an opportunity then to go to the Inland Northwest Community Foundation, and went there as a program director in the grants department, moved up to the grants director, and also became the director of marketing and technology there. So I kind of went, I was there during the time that we did rebranding there from Foundation Northwest to the Inland Northwest Community Foundation, which really was about changing the focus of the organization because it was very Spokane-centric at the time I came in, and this new CEO had come in just about a year before I did. And so most of their funding was around the immediate Spokane area and kind of the surrounding communities. But really the mission of the organization was to serve the 10 easternmost counties in Washington and the 10 northernmost in Idaho, including up here in Bonner County. So I was working on doing outreach. We had a very large gift that came in during the time that I was there from Margaret Galbraith, which was really geared towards funding here in North Idaho. And so was working at doing outreach, so really had the opportunity to meet many of the community groups and really look at how charitable this community is. It's amazing. Left there for an opportunity to go to Spokane County, and was there for almost 6 years as their first ever compliance officer, formed a centralized grants office and was overseeing management of grants there, compliance with all the regulations, strategic planning around grant funding, and that kind of grew into, I ended up managing their energy conservation projects. We were doing a $4 million capital project that was overseen by my group at the time that I left, and was recruited to go to the city of Spokane due to grants compliance issues. And so was there for 2 years, came into multiple audit findings at the city and a couple different departments on several fronts, state auditor's office, federal government. And so successfully resolved all of those that I was initially hired to work on. And we received an award from the state auditor's office for my outstanding team there. Really had a great group of people, and saw the opportunity here and couldn't pass up the opportunity to come be a part of this community. My husband and I have been coming up here for about 10 years. In the summer times, absolutely love Sandpoint. Our long-term plan was to move here. So, and I have to say, it's wonderful to be somewhere where I wasn't coming in to overhaul and fix things because of problems. You know, there's lots of opportunities here, but it's not about coming in resolving a bunch of issues that already exist.
But so, as you were in some of your jobs in Spokane.
Yeah, right? My last two previous. So I'm excited about that.
So your new position is city administrator, and it's a brand new position for Sandpoint. Describe what the job entails. And we have to recognize you're probably going to kind of invent parts of this job, I would assume.
Yeah, which actually isn't new to me. So if throughout my career, when I was at the Domestic Violence Consortium, I was the first. It wasn't even an organization when I went there. I was the first marketing director at the Inland Northwest Community Foundation at a time that the organization was kind of reinventing itself. I was the first grants director at Spokane County, and I was the first director of grants at the city of Spokane. So kind of forging new ground isn't new to me, but there's lots of models for what a city administrator is. And really what the position is it kind of operates as your COO of the organization. So that's your position, who's managing day-to-day operations.
Chief operating officer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I oversee all the department heads and work with them. And, you know, my approach to the position is not adding in another layer of bureaucracy, but really looking for where the opportunities that there's value added with the position. You know, one of the complaints and criticisms about the city is that we haven't over the years effectively engaged the citizens and communicated about what we're doing as much as people would expect or hope that we would. And, you know, the challenge for our department heads is they're trying to run their various departments on a day-to-day basis and don't really have the time to think about, you know, how are we going to strategically engage the community over and above what they're doing? And how are we going to communicate things and how are we going to message things? So that's one of the areas that I'm really working on coming in here is looking at, again, how can we improve our communications? How can we do more community outreach and engagement and be really strategic about those efforts?
So what are your ideas there? You know, as being somebody, we're part of the media here, we're on the radio right now, and I do see the local media attempting to keep up on everything that the city's doing. What can the community and the city do better to communicate with people?
Well, I think for us at the city, being more proactive, oftentimes what drives the stories in the media about the city are someone's called into the paper or there's rumors or you know, someone asks somebody in media like yourselves, do you know what's going on with this? And so then the contact comes into the city. So we're always in reactionary mode. And when you're in reactionary mode, you don't really get a good opportunity to really tell what your story is. So you're just responding to whatever the particular issue is at hand. So we are launching a new website next month. So I'm very excited about that. Our director of planning and economic development, Aaron Qualls, has been working on this for some time, and we're finally getting to launch next month. In fact, Aaron and I are going to be working on that this morning. And in terms of outreach with the media and looking at being more proactive, what I'm working on, and it's probably going to be a few weeks before we really nuance to figure out how we're going to do this, is putting out kind of a weekly bulletin or a briefing from the city on what's going on, what do we have coming up, and having that be generated by us proactively communicating on this rather than just waiting for when somebody will have a question. So that's definitely one of the areas we're looking into newsletter too. And so I'm trying to figure out how that most effectively will work. You know, do we have something in our website people sign up for and then it pushes out, or how most effectively to do that? We're looking at using our Facebook page more than we have in the past. One of the examples of us, you know, starting in this direction of being more proactive is I've been working with the chamber, and we put out a flyer last month on the 1% sales tax to raise money for Memorial Field. And again, when I came in my first week, what I was hearing in the background were all these calls from business owners in our area trying to figure out how they implement this, how they remit the tax, and with questions. And so rather than, again, waiting for those calls, this was an effort to be proactive and put information out there. So we do have that up on our Facebook page. We did a mailing to all of the businesses. I worked with the chamber and the bid, who also sent out information, and we're looking at whether we're going to do an educational workshop on this as well. So,
It seems like sometimes it folks don't pay attention to issues until they get really far along the decision-making process, and then they discover them, and then it tends to conflate into a more of a controversy. So I guess my question would be, do you see ways to engage the citizens more, or to prompt or promote more community engagement, citizen engagement?
Well, one example of that is around the Memorial Field Project. And, kind of some of the issues that have come up around that, the 1% sales tax coming that voters overwhelmingly passed in November. And I believe this is a project that the community is really looking forward to seeing come to fruition. But there was a large campaign in the community last year, as you know, about the resort tax, the local option tax to support this project. That came up in November, and then it was kind of quiet. And then in January is when the tax went into effect. And so, you have businesses, you know, there's been some time, they over the holidays really probably haven't given a lot of thought to how to implement this. So, you know, continuing that community engagement and that community discussion on this project, and letting people see it as it comes to fruition and give input is really important in a project like that. Most recently, last week, we had the issue around the tree removal on the site, and, you know, a lot of that was in works prior to me coming on. In hindsight, I think we would have done a better job of communicating about that at the front end so the community knew.
Just to give people a heads up that the project was going to include some tree removal. And to be clear, there were about 30 trees, I believe, that were
there were about down. 30 trees, yeah. And the reason that the trees needed to be removed is, you know, we're going from a grandstand that only seats 900, to 1,500 with the new facility. So it's a larger footprint than the existing stadium that we have now. So the trees had to come out for that footprint and access to the new facility.
With that in mind, the fact that the tree removal really wasn't on the table for the citizens to know about, so it was kind of a little bit of a shock. There's probably more things coming up, such as the timeline for the project to start construction, what that's going to look like and feel like to the citizens. There's probably things now that you're looking at to bring up to the citizens and into the news ahead of time.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So our next timeline coming up is we anticipate going to the council in March, mid-March, probably their March 16th meeting, with the engineering specs so that we can go out to bid for the project. But in advance of that meeting, Kim Woodruff and I were meeting yesterday and talking about, again, how do we more effectively engage the community on this project? So what we're planning on that is to have the engineers actually either tape out or spray down on the ground what the footprint is going to be, have the designs out there on site, and again, invite the community to come out on site, take a look at what the footprint is going to be, what the renderings, as we've moved into the final stage, are looking like before this goes to council, before we go out to bid. So, you know, it's one thing to see something on paper, and it's another thing to actually see it laid out on the ground. And had that occurred earlier, people probably would have understood what the challenge was, again, with the trees and why those needed to come out. So, you know, we can look forward to how to improve our processes, how to better communicate. It is what it is at this point.
It becomes public relations.
Exactly.
And including the stakeholders in a way that they can be included, such as when do the bids go out? There may be people that want to know that. They could go find it, but if the city proactively brings that information out, it would be...
Absolutely. And that's what we're definitely this morning after I leave here is Aaron and I are meeting on the website. We're going to be looking at dedicating a special section to Memorial Field and updating again on what the progress is, laying out our timeline there so people know what it is, because just mentioning it one time, you know, life moves on, you forget about it, but having it out there so communities members can look at it, and really putting out there too for us at the city, what our benchmarks, what our milestones are. So, you know, we can be measured against those. There's nothing wrong with looking at our performance and setting our goals and putting it out there.
I think there were some folks that expected that immediately after the measure passed, that those grandstands were going to be coming down. And I've seen some criticism that, you know, they felt like they were deceived that the grandstands are actually going to stand for another season. So what you're talking about actually is addressing that by communicating these things in advance to folks about what the plan is here.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, there was a meeting of stakeholder groups around the timeline related to this. So the schools were involved because it's such an important facility for athletics, and certainly Sandpoint Festival was involved there. So initially the plan was to try to do a quick design build project, but after meeting with the stakeholder groups, you know, the risk when you're doing a construction project this large, there's a very good likelihood that there could be delays due to materials, weather, you know, a number of factors. And so the risk of that on potentially affecting our ability to hold the Sandpoint Festival, to meet our home games, the risk graduation, the risk was simply too great. So it was decided by the stakeholder groups that really we needed to wait until we got into September. That's when demolition and construction will begin moving on a very quick timeline. In addition to that, one of the other factors that we have, which is a factor for us in the community for pretty much most of our construction projects, is our water levels, so the water table. So in order to set a good foundation for this larger facility, it's really time-wise, it's better to do it in the fall when our water levels are lower. As opposed to having something
in the spring, yeah, when the water
and they're
table
coming
is much
up.
Higher.
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that will ensure that, you know, we have a facility that's going to be longstanding for another 100 mm-hmm. years for us. So.
I attended that stakeholder meeting where all the different groups that use the field came together to talk about the potential schedule. And a couple of the other concerns were that by expediting it and trying to get it done this very winter, were that it's going to cost more. It's going to incur more expense compared to being able to bid it out and have a more orderly process, as well as it would have precluded some of the local bidders that could possibly do some of the work, at least the subcontractors wouldn't be able to get bids in as fast as was going to be required to do that. So there were a lot of factors in play, I know, in the decision to move the construction out a little bit.
Well, one of the things that we're doing, too, is you know, voters passed the funding for most of the project itself, but it's also an opportunity for us to look at some lighting improvements in the area, reflective of, again, overall establishing the sense of community, tying in kind of the lighting design that we have and will have moving forward downtown, some stormwater improvements, doing some real enhancements into the entrance into the facility itself. But in order to accomplish all of those additional add-ons, it requires that we secure some outside funding as well. So we just submitted an application earlier this month to the Inland Northwest Community Foundation. We're invited on Friday for a second round and highly expect them to be coming and doing a site visit here. So it's an opportunity for them to take a look at what we've got going on as a community. And again, it's great exposure for us and all of our organizations in the community with a funding agency. So, you know, it gives us the opportunity again to look at leveraging some outside dollars for additional enhancements. So,
great.
And just like the Memorial Field reconstruction and upgrade is on your calendar to keep our citizens informed, are there other projects, not at that scope, at that large scope, but that we as citizens would want to know about ahead of time for not only maybe input, but just to be have transparency for the city so that we're informed?
Oh, lots of issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have things going on all of the time. The city's a dynamic, busy organization. So another example that is an important, significant community project would be the development of Farman's Landing, which the city recently acquired. We applied for a grant last month for a community engagement planning process around that particular site. You know, it's identified in our downtown streets plan as one of the gateways to Sandpoint. You know, it's the area you see coming over the bypass looking at downtown. So really,
it's, and to clarify where that is, that's the parking lot behind the old Gunnings Alley building, which is how the locals would know that. The city acquired the waterfront there.
Yes.
Did they acquire the whole parking lot as well?
We have a section of that parking lot, not the whole thing, but part of that parking lot, yes, which has been one of the issues too, because it was there was permit parking for that the business owners had in that area back there. We had a parking workshop we held at the city just a few weeks back, talking about, again, parking in the downtown area, another one of our hot topics. And you know, we had several businesses show up with concerns about what was going to happen with that parking area and were they going to lose their spots. Well, again, the plan is to engage in really citizen-involved, long-range planning for that area, the development of that spot. We need to shore up that shoreline there. You know, this was acquired partially as, well, really it's about stormwater management. Again, protecting our important resource of the water. But you also, when you take a look in that area, you'll see that we've got significant degradation of the bank there. And so that's absolutely one thing that we're going to have to shore up this spring, at least with a temporary measure. And then, again, have a community process about overall planning for this area. But out of that parking workshop, based on citizen input, one of the decisions that we made is that area behind that permit parking area would remain, with now the city owning it, we'll continue the permits with the business. So we're in the process of planning that now, working with Diamond Parking, who does our parking patrols, on how we would most effectively do that. So we're waiting for a proposal back from them, and we'll be coming back reporting to the council and, again, reporting back to the community on that as well.
Mm-hmm. Lots of details.
Oh, yes.
And a ton of projects to talk about, and we want to talk about some of those, but I wanted to back up just a little bit more to talk about what the position entails. So you mentioned you oversee department heads, mm-hmm. and that's a new thing.
Yep.
How does that work? How do you work with the department heads who have been up to this point kind of autonomous with their departments, I would assume?
Well, yes and no. I mean, Carrie Logan was, she was really hands-on mayor, and so did weekly one-on-one meetings with the department heads as well as a weekly staff meeting. And Shelby, our current mayor, and I have continued that process, but again, under our current model, we've made some revisions to that. So I do the one-on-one meetings with the department head and then heads, and then leading up to a weekly staff meeting where Shelby comes in and kind of hears about where we are and establishes his strategic vision and goals. And the weekly meetings really are about coordination amongst the department heads, and that's where this position coming in really is a value added in the organization. Is each department head kind of has their specific area, and one of the areas that we're looking at, again, and this is around engagement, communication, is even within our own organization, how do we improve communications across our departments and look for opportunities that may exist across the departments. So, for example, you look at a project like Farman's Landing, well, it's a stormwater project, really is the heart of what it's about. But it's also the opportunity to create kind of a small park area, gathering place at the site. So that falls under Kim Woodruff's area in Parks and Recreation. It definitely has a planning component and needs to fit into the downtown plan, which is Aaron Qualls, our Director of Planning and Economic Development. So, you know, we start crossing over multiple departments. And not only does it give us the opportunity to look at how to create value added across the departments, but it also gives us the opportunity to look at strategically how could we align funding to really create a project of benefit to the community. So what are our department heads are very knowledgeable about the funding streams in each of their respective areas, but you know, there's an opportunity to put a larger project together, bring in multiple funding streams, you know, grants, outside funding, which are value added for our taxpayers, our residents. So those are the opportunities we're really working on.
And with your background, are you going to kind of up the search for potential grants?
We're looking for some opportunities. I mean, my role is, I didn't come in to be, I'm not the grants writer. Mm-hmm. I'm not the grants coordinator here. But definitely, you know, I, with my knowledge of outside funding sources and resources and search engines to look for funding sources, it certainly is going to be something we look at, and potentially looking at just kind of structurally, how do we most effectively pursue additional funding opportunities, and effectively manage those. We in the past had a grants position within the city. We've since moved away from that, and you know, that's something for us to consider moving forward. If we look at bringing in outside dollars, one of the grants we're looking at for this year is to apply for a CDBG grant for the downtown streets. That's a $500,000 grant. It's federal, so a lot of significant requirements and guidelines, and the feds keep changing the rules. So that's when, you know, there's a point at which you have to look at, is it best to use our existing resources to do this, or, you know, do we look at expanding our capacity in that area and using outside dollars to pay for that expanded capacity? So,
And what would that project entail, the city streets downtown with that possible federal grant?
That would fund some of the improvements downtown in terms of the realignment, sidewalk improvements.
Kind of the project that's already in process.
Right. But again, it's a multi-phase project. So that's another one, again, that will be really important that we're communicating, because there's so many phases to this, so that people really understand it's a much bigger project than this current phase. And what we don't want to do is catch people by surprise. Here was this change. Oh, boy, here comes another change.
Mm-hmm. So it really gives the opportunity for citizens to be informed, as long as they know where to go and pay attention.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Informed, and also to help inform us from a resident's perspective on, you know, what works best for the community, what the community would like to see. So groupthink isn't always a bad thing.
Right. So then you're looking at the citizens as stakeholders in different projects, depending on what those projects are.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, bottom line, they're always stakeholders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about the street redesign project a bit more. It is a multi-phase, multi-year project. But I think the first piece comes up just this next construction season, as I understand, that when Fifth Avenue is going to be redesigned to be two-way.
Yes. Yep. And so the state is working on that project, and we anticipate that happening, coming to completion in probably October of this year. And at that same time, then that's when we will be making this change in some of our streets. We get handed back our streets, and we'll be moving to the two-way streets. So that will be down, for example, right there on First. So we've got a couple streets that we'll be moving to two-way as a part of that.
First Avenue and Cedar Street, which are currently one-ways. And then fifth, a little section between Cedar Street and Pine, which is one way right now, will go two way. So it'll be a big change, and there'll be a lot of folks that are good.
And communication will be key because with that change occurring, there is a high likelihood without effective communication, it can also create chaos. So communication is going to be extremely important on that project.
And church also is a one way that will be going two way. My office happens to be on Church, and actually it is. It's a two-way some of the time.
Right? A lot of the time. Always look both ways, even if it's a one-way on
that's right.
Street.
If you're crossing church, you should always check both directions because there's enough people that are you know, instantly going the wrong direction because they haven't caught the signs. I want to remind our listeners, we're talking with, this is 88.5 KRFY, The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. We're talking this morning with Jennifer Stapleton. She's the new city administrator for the city of Sandpoint. And we got a ton more stuff to talk about, but Susie, should we give our guest a breather and take a musical break?
Absolutely. And this is a song that Jennifer picked out of Eva Cassidy's song book. Eva Cassidy is an American singer who was born on this day in 1963. She passed away at age 33. Beautiful voice. And Jennifer picked out this song. It's called People Get Ready. Eva Cassidy. We'll be right back with more of the KRFY Morning Show. And that was Eva Cassidy, People Get Ready. This is the KRFY Morning Show with Chris and Susie. And our guest in the studio this morning is Jennifer Stapleton, the Sandpoint City Administrator. So lots more to talk about.
So, Jennifer, we were talking about other projects that the city has going. And you were talking about a very interesting one with solar roadways.
Yeah, we were out and met with Scott and Julie Bruce at Solar the roadways on Friday, and certainly the city's very engaged with them and their exciting technology and business development, and looking at doing the first public demonstration project with laying their solar panels. So we were out meeting on Friday talking about timelines with that and locations. So we think we've landed on a pretty exciting location. We're still kind of working out the details.
Can you reveal that location?
Well, we're looking right now.
Understanding it's still still up there a little
still,
bit.
Still in process, but we're looking at that area around the fountain downtown, which I think would be so exciting for this community in terms of drawing, again, people downtown into our businesses downtown. And they've come a long way with their prototypes with the panels. We were looking at their most current design, which I think they said had 25% more of the solar cells in it, and they have LED lights in it. So it gives you the opportunity to do a pattern with the lights, light them up around the theme of an event if we're doing an event downtown. So if you think about Lost in the 50s or another event like that, so we're really excited to be engaged with them, and we think, we're hoping that this project may happen as early as this spring or this summer.
Wow. And so how big of an area around the park, around the fountains would be involved?
We're working through that now. So we plan on applying to the state for a grant. We're waiting to hear back from Scott and Julie in terms of what the costs would be for the panels and installation. So they're acquiring new equipment and have been working on this development. So it's very exciting. Mm-hmm. So, and part of what drew me here to the community in this position.
You mentioned that so these are solar panels that are embedded in the pavement, basically. And you mentioned that they have LED lights in them.
Yeah.
And I've seen some of the conceptualizations about how these might work if they were actually built into roadways, and you could change striping. You could have emergency alerts that flash up right out of the road for drivers to see. The technology is not just collecting electricity, but it's also kind of like a communication technology.
Oh, exactly, exactly. And the control that they have developed for it is just kind of a small USB plug-in. It's amazing. Really innovative people in our community. It's amazing.
It sounds very exciting. And it's funny, every time you say solar roadways, everyone smiles because it's hopeful and it's a positive move forward. But you were talking about how the city, the different departments of the city work together and collaborate on a project like this. Who would be the lead in it and how many other groups would participate? Obviously, because you oversee and look at every aspect of the work of the city, you would be. Would that be streets and the street department?
Well, certainly street department would be involved, and Cody Van Dyke was at the meeting with me on Friday, but there's a planning and economic development component to this as well. So, you know, Aaron Qualls would be involved in this. So, you know, again, it's another good example of where we're crossing departments, and so really thinking about how we're working together to achieve the vision and mission of the various different departments, and how we can work together to bring the most to the table. Certainly funding is an element of this too. So I'm working with both Cody, Aaron, and then with Scott and Julie on what are funding opportunities out there as well. So there's currently some exciting things out there, like a Green Cities Challenge and some other things we're looking at also. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, lots of exciting things. Mm-hmm. We're really in an exciting time in this community.
You know, you mentioned Cody Van Dyke, and he's been our public works director for 20 plus years. Yeah. But turns out he's going to be leaving the city.
Yeah, I loved that the day I came to, you know, be formally appointed to the position, I got that news. So,
yeah, yeah. He's been a huge mainstay. Yeah. So what's the process right now with replacing him, and what's the timeline for that?
We've gone through an interview process. We don't have a person yet that we're ready to name as somebody who we're formally moving forward. Shelby's moving forward to appointment to the position. So we're still working through the process. I mean, ideally, we hope to have overlap. And if that's not possible, I mean, we're working on planning for what that means. Cody, fortunately, is staying in the community and will be here for some time before he heads off to Mexico for a well-deserved break. And so
put him on speed dial.
Yeah. Yeah. That's we've had many, many conversations about that. So, and, you know, Cody's very committed to this community and certainly the legacy that he's left at the city. So, hopefully we have an announcement on that soon. We're diligently working on it, but this is a really key position for the community. So, you know, we've got to find that right candidate, that right fit. And our staff isn't that large. You know, we're a full city staff of 85. So, you know, we're kind of like a large family at the city. So it's also got to be a fit within our structure and
within the culture,
with our other department heads. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we do have to give a shout out to his dedication and all that he has brought. With that kind of longevity in a position, you just establish such great foundational components to a community like this.
Absolutely.
And there's been an awful lot of progress in our infrastructure, I think, in the time that he's been here. So he's overseen a lot of that. So thanks, Cody, if you're out there listening.
Thanks, Cody Van Dyke.
One project, actually, that probably I'm sure that involves Cody, is the Schweitzer Bridge. We mentioned it a little bit at the top of the show. This is the bridge that badly needs to be replaced across Sand Creek on the Kootenai Cutoff Road. And there's just been some news on that.
Yes, we were recently, they did some swapping, moving around of funding, which took a lot of maneuvering behind the scenes. And LTAC has been a great partner for us in that. So we have been awarded funding for the project. We're moving as quickly as possible to see that bridge replacement happen. I'm working right now with Shelby and I are with Mayor Geiger over in Ponderé to get an MOU in place between the two cities, because the bridge is half Ponderé and half Sandpoint. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, one of those collaboration opportunities. So we plan on having that MOU go before our respective councils, probably the early March council meeting, which is fine with the timing for the project, but we're moving very quickly. And we expect construction to occur next year. So, you know, we're going through final engineering, and then obviously, again, this has to go out to bid. It's a public works project. And so we're expecting construction to begin next spring on this.
And so that bridge was recently, basically, it was reclassified, and there's load limits on it now.
Yes.
Is that impairing commerce?
Well, we get complaints about that, and it definitely impacts our trucking routes in the community, and we at the city of Sandpoint design our truck routes so that they can accommodate trucks throughout the year. So we typically don't do load limits, and that was one of the questions that I had gotten yesterday, and Cody and I were talking about. And so while we have restrictions on the bridge currently, you know, the intent with the replacement of the bridge is all, you know, those limits will be removed again. We don't do seasonal restrictions in Sandpoint like some of the other cities do, including Ponderé, mm-hmm. For some of their routes.
So I'll ask, probably going to be running out of time here before very long, but I will ask you about the project you were probably hired to fix in this town, which is parking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Good, I knew we had parking. To get to that one.
There was a workshop recently on
yes.
parking. What's happening with parking in the downtown core, which has been an ongoing, I don't know, debate and frustration for some people. And other folks believe that really there is adequate parking. It's just the way we move people around to understand that the parking is available in the city parking lot. What's your take on the parking situation?
So we're looking at a few different options. And then, like I mentioned earlier, we'll be coming back to council with some recommendations out of that meeting. One of the directions, strategic directions council wanted to go was look at opening up the city parking lot so it's free parking.
All day instead of 2-hour limit.
Yeah, yeah. So hopefully, again, to drive our business owners to parking in that area as opposed to some of the spots downtown that they want to hold open for bringing business into downtown.
So, for the customers. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're working with Diamond on a proposal for that. In that parking lot down by Farman's Landing, looking at retaining the existing permits between the city and those business owners who have permits down there. So we definitely need some type of enforcement there. So we're looking at that. Contrary to one of the rumors that's floating around, we did not discuss, nor is there any intent at this point to put meters down at City Beach. So that was not part of the parking workshop.
That's very good to clarify.
Yeah.
No rumors like that.
meters on First or Cedar, is that a possibility?
In the long term, not in probably the next year, but looking at long-term planning again about downtown streets, certainly that has been something that's been discussed and is likely to happen. So we also looked at converting potentially. We're looking at converting some of the loading zone areas and some of the other spots to short-term, doing kind of a test. And several of the downtown business owners and the bid was certainly supportive of this project, doing some kind of a pilot around like a 15-minute parking so people could kind of get in and out, and then using that same space to be the loading zone for businesses as well. So I think we're going to move to testing a few spots. And then one of the other areas we're looking into is, you know, we have parking enforcement, and with that comes tickets. And what we looked at with that is we have a fair amount of individuals with outstanding tickets, $300 or more, up to, I think, the high end, $9,000 in outstanding.
So basically, they're just refusing to pay their tickets.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, we haven't had a really effective policy on enforcement of that. So, you know, we've kind of reached that point in time. We need to address this before it continues to grow larger. And so that's something we're working with Diamond on. We're looking at, and we're looking at other cities, what they've done in this area. We're looking at the possibility of getting a boot. And so over a certain threshold, you haven't paid your tickets, you're going to find you have a boot on your car when you come out, and you'll have to pay your tickets to get the boot removed. Certainly we wouldn't jump to that extreme with implementing a program like that. We're looking at, and what other cities have done is had some type of an amnesty program, which again would have to be broadly communicated, but when that comes out, typically you've resolved most of the issues. You don't have to get to the boot. But, you know, parking enforcement is expensive. It's certainly, and we presented this at the workshop, it's been much cheaper option for the city to contract with Diamond to do that than for us to be doing it ourselves. But even with that, we aren't making money off of parking enforcement, and that isn't necessarily what we're looking to do either. But if we're going to have parking enforcement, then we need to enforce it. So,
Yeah. On that issue of doing something like a boot, you're going to find people that are be outraged by it, and you'll find other people that play by the rules that say, well,
finally,
you kind of have it coming.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's one of those issues. Yeah. We definitely at the meeting had people really shocked by the dollar amount of outstanding tickets. And then when you, as you looked by individual, and again, we didn't put names out there. There were no identifiers, but I mean, significant amounts. So, if you just can keep doing this, you know, it could grow, continue to grow. Mm-hmm. And, so then, and what that, the message is that our parking enforcement isn't working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not enforcement.
So it's an ongoing subject that you'll have on your agenda over time. It's been great. We're pretty much out of time here.
I was going to ask you, Jennifer, is there anything you want to shout out to, the listening public about that we missed here?
Well, I hope people will get on our website, start using our Facebook page as we're communicating out there. And I'm open to hearing input. You know, I'm still new to the community and open to hearing from residents in terms of perceptions about the city and taking that into consideration and looking as we kind of mold and strategically develop how we're going to operate as an organization moving forward. Mm-hmm. So just so happy to be here. Mm-hmm. Such a wonderful community. I love it.
Well, it's been really nice to get to know you here on the 88.5 airwaves. And we hope that at times you'll come back and visit us and tell us more about what's going on.
I would love
Keep us informed.
Well,
another
help
way
me.
To do it. You betcha. And thank you so much. We're going to just wrap up this morning with a few announcements and leave with a song. So if you want to stay with us, Jennifer, we have, as I said, next Thursday, actually this Thursday, February 4th, on the KRFY Morning Show with Jack Peterson. His guest this week will be representatives from the acting group Unknown Locals. And I remember them coming in before. It's always fun to have them in. That's at 88.5 KRFY at 8 o'clock on Thursday. And next Tuesday, our guests will be Jim Healy and Phil Huff, who will be talking about long-distance hiking and the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, both those guys have done the big, Jim, I think, is the first time on the Appalachian Trail.
He's done part of it, but he's ready to go back on it
and
March
do the whole
1st.
Thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Phil Huff, of course, has done the Pacific Crest Trail as well as the Continental Divide Trail. I think he's actually done the Appalachian Trail, too. So he's done all three.
I think he's done a lot of long-distance hiking. So it'll be kind of interesting next Tuesday. And as I said, tonight on the Live and Local show, I'll have live in the studio Desiree and Fiddlin' Red from Roughshod, and that starts at 7 o'clock every Tuesday night. So thanks for listening to 88.5 KRFY for the morning show. Chris, Jennifer, I hope you both have a great day.
Yep. Thank you, Susie. Bye, everybody.
Bye. And we're going to go out with a song by Petula Clark. It was the number one song in 1965, appropriately named Downtown. Have a good day.
When you're alone and life is making